So here's the introduction. The electric chair in the state prison in Grady, Arkansas, with its thick leather straps and cables, can crank out 2,500 volts. It's bolted to the floor on a black rubber mat and sits silently under the glare of fluorescent lights. Warden Willis H. Sargent, in charge of the prison for many years, says, quote, "I don't want to take the life or be involved in taking life, but I have to look at it from the other side of the fence, at the victims and the victims' families." So why do so many Americans feel ambivalent about capital punishment? I mean, does anybody have a strong opinion on that here?
Ambivalent meaning?
Like, you can go either way, you have strong convictions on it. And maybe mixed feelings about it. Do you have one?
Mary, you're asking, like, as a whole, are you
for or against? I mean, how strong is your opinion on this issue?
There are certain crimes that are deserving of capital punishment.
Okay.
But there are probably some crimes that shouldn't deserve capital punishment.
Okay.
So, yes and no.
Yes and no.
That was very ambivalent. Very.
Yes, I'm for capital punishment in the crimes that deserve capital punishment.
Okay. Yeah, why is it kind of a touchy issue right now?
Well, the Supreme Court has pretty much shut it down in most places, and the liberal mindset has made the idea even more hard to accomplish because they put so many rules in. Because of the clause in the Constitution says cruel and unusual punishment.
Okay.
And that's used a lot to.
So it's been kind of hard to
get it done.
To get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why else is this kind of an interesting topic?
Everyone has a different opinion on what should and shouldn't be classified in some people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have strong opinions against any sort of capital punishment, then it's going to be difficult to have any sort of conversation for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Going back to the ambivalence idea, like, I think we're so far removed from it. Like, I mean, very few people actually know somebody personally who has had that kind of punishment, and it also happens so many years after the crime that I feel like there's that disconnect.
Yeah, and that's probably a lot of it too. It's like so long ago,
it's
not fresh in your mind. Yeah,
hasn't there been a few more, like, in the last couple of years?
There's been a few more. The numbers have been dwindling. I did some research on it about the countries that execute the most people. You have, like, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and then the United States. And so there's a little bit of a kind of maybe a social embarrassment that some people have. But, I mean, why? I mean, when you look at why, well, we kind of talked about you kind of brought up the liberal mindset, right? Why is it that, let's say, in Western Europe, the liberal mindset, maybe in the U.S., why do they oppose capital punishment? For instance, you have that one Norwegian right-wing nationalist who, I think, he gunned down 67 kids and adults on some island, and he basically he lives in a condo under house arrest, gets cooking lessons and all this other stuff for the education, and he has maybe a 20-year term. I mean, it's a pretty light sentence considering what he has done. What's the worldview that kind of goes into that kind of punishment?
It just, for me, I think that capital punishment hits on this nerve of there's this underlying one rejection and fear and suppression of judgment in general for man, and that it exposes and it's super fearful, uncomfortable to reconcile, for people to reconcile that man should be worthy of death for what they've done, something evil. Even like when you talk about the Columbine shootings and interviews, people won't use the term evil.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's an excuse. There's this there's this do whatever it costs to hold back the idea that man is evil and deserves punishment.
That's what I was going to say. There's that lack of willingness to say that man is essentially good, is the philosophy, and that he can be rehabilitated. Yeah. And
and when we distribute, if the state distributes this capital punishment, it's very it also hits on this lack of a desire to compare our behavior with a holy or unholy standard, and just say, this is comparing to human, it's in our own fallenness.
Yeah.
There's no idea of a righteous standard or anything like that.
Yeah, so there is a certain postmodern element of who am I to, mm-hmm. to not only judge but condemn to.
Right, and there's a valid argument in the sense of oftentimes, mm-hmm. There's flaw. Every human being is flawed along the process, mm-hmm. and so if there's a chance that some injustice could be done to this murderous rapist, mm-hmm. then for somehow that negates the punishment that's due.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, and I think you look at the theory of law. And specifically punishment, you have different theories behind it. One would be the purpose of the criminal justice system is to sort of rehabilitate criminals. Mm-hmm. You ever thought about where we got the term penitentiary from?
To be penitent.
To be penitent, right? Prison is a place for people to be penitent and then come out transformed. And so if you have that view of the criminal justice system, it'd be very difficult to justify it, right? Another theory would be, let's say, deterrence. That the point of the criminal justice system is to dissuade people from future crimes. If there's severe enough punishment, then they'll think twice before doing it. One of the problems with that is how many criminals in the act at the moment think they're going to get caught and do it anyway, right?
Yeah, or reason out. Okay, if I do this, uh-huh. this is going to happen. So.
And then there's just the punitive element, that the criminal justice system is a place to execute just straight out justice. You do this, you pay the price, to kind of satisfy this sense of justice that we have, but then you get into, well, whose justice is more just than the others? You see what I'm saying? So from a postmodern construct, if you think that truth is relative, it's very difficult to justify the death penalty unless you do the deterrence one, right? That somehow it will deter it.
I think in one sense, too, there's this rationale that people tend to have that so long as anything that is going to directly impact them personally, mm-hmm. right, they are in favor of stopping mm-hmm. that behavior.
Yeah.
But any kind of remedy that will allow them to mm-hmm. live their life the way that they would like.
Yeah.
It's kind of acceptable. And there's not a concern for the justice and the punishment of the wrongdoer or the justice for the sake of the victim. Mm-hmm. It's like, is what's going to allow me to live my life with the least amount of cost?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, nowadays, there's another reason why people are very reluctant to implement the death penalty. Do you know what that is?
There's been exonerations, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's what you're thinking of, but...
Yeah, there's been exonerations.
From DNA evidence, we have newer mm-hmm. technology that prove that even though they've gone through the system and still found guilty, they're innocent.
Yeah.
So we don't want to kill somebody innocent.
Yeah, so the reluctance to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, DNA evidence has changed that. And there's another modern phenomenon that has kind of raised awareness that causes people to oppose it. And that would be this, and this I think this is a fair point. I mean, studies have shown that if you are a black man and you kill a white woman, or let's say a white person versus a white person killing a black person or a black person killing another black person, there's higher rates of homicide or capital punishment convictions in that case. And so there is a sense that there's been a racist implementation. Right. And that would be something where I don't think it's necessarily... I think that's verifiable, right? Same crime, you just change out the victim's color, and that leads to
different punishment.
A different punishment, right? And so, and I think rightfully, I mean, that should be a great concern, that can you implement capital punishment in light of its certainty fairly and equitably across racial lines? So there's a lot of people who are, they kind of go both ways on it, inside and outside the church. Now, for you Catholics out there, I mean, you know, why does the Catholic Church oppose capital punishment? Even though they burn many heretics at the stake.
Unless it's an Inquisition.
Unless it's an Inquisition, right? Because you do have some very ardent, you know, religious societies, like Mennonites would be another one that opposes capital punishment. So what would the logic be there?
Only God has the right to take a life.
Mm-hmm. Most likely sending somebody to hell.
Okay. But you know what's interesting? A lot of denominations that don't really believe in hell also oppose capital punishment. What would be the connection there?
If you don't believe in hell and you kill someone, aren't they? Where would they be going then?
Yeah.
It's just over.
Yeah. What was that?
Those are the people that just think when you die, it's just over. It's done.
There's some stuff, but there might be religious people who think that everybody goes to heaven.
So they're not thinking. You know, they're not suffering for their crime. You're just killing them, and then they go to heaven.
Yeah.
Would that be there?
Because then would it be a sin on you? And then so they might you say, being the implementer are then?
They might say
I was that. Trying to see the connection. If you don't believe in hell, but you don't believe in capital punishment, so where's the problem? Does then that greatest sin be the implementer?
So they don't want
possibly.
To do it.
I don't.
Yeah. No, this is interesting because I think when I kind of look at capital punishment, there's a worldview that comes along with it. For instance, people who don't really believe in hell, they don't necessarily believe in what we call substitutionary atonement, that God would punish his son, right? They don't have an idea of a punishing God, the God who actually executes judgment. And so when that's your view of God, then how could you justify human behavior doing that? The God who doesn't condemn, why should humans condemn? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then you kind of go to why people support it. I was thinking about in 1988, George H.W. Bush was facing Michael Dukakis. And
yeah.
During one
Dukakis.
Of the debates, yeah, I remember Dukakis. He was a nice man, but he was a card-carrying Massachusetts liberal who had a huge polling lead in July. And he was asked in one of the debates, it was known that he's a card-carrying member of the ACLU. He opposed the death penalty. And he was asked in an interview that if somebody raped and murdered your wife, Kitty, what would you do? And he kind of gave a very stoic answer.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember this? Like, I love my wife very, very much, but I still think that life in prison is enough. And that just tanked him, right?
Yeah.
But you know what was really interesting is just how much more pro-death penalty the United States was
at that time,
in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, of course you're going to put him.
Yeah, no question.
To death, right? Ted Bundy was going to die a few years later, and everyone was like, yeah, of course. And so there has been a real cultural shift away from capital punishment.
It almost seems like in those times, people believed that evil people deserve death, but everyone was just self-righteous enough to think that not them.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like people know that, okay, we're not good, and
mm-hmm.
so we have to reject the idea of capital punishment or some kind of judgment, because
mm-hmm.
this is so undeniably that we've rejected any kind of moral standard.
I mean, so why would, what would be the argument in favor of capital punishment that people would make?
I think the old argument was to deter crime.
Deter crime,
you
yeah.
know, and that's, I think about my parents, what they believe, they were strongly in favor of it. You know, I mean, I,
uh-huh.
can remember that argument. And, you know, it's like, no question, why would you not? Mm-hmm. You got a murderer. The Bible says you can murder him, you know, and kill him. Mm-hmm. That's a punishment to give.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it seemed like the just thing, you know, mm-hmm. in past times.
Yeah.
Not just give him what he deserved, but you get justice for his crime.
Yeah, I think that would be justice. I mean, one thing that this prison warden talks about is he doesn't really like taking a life, but he has to think about the victims. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's it implied there?
That the murderer's life is more important than the victim.
Yeah.
He has more of a right. Mm-hmm.
If you think about his victims, they're all dead. I mean,
yeah.
Most probably. Like.
Yeah, why would a family come in and watch an execution?
Closure.
Okay. I
mean, this person did this horrible, terrible thing, uh-huh. and they can't, there's absolutely no way they can ever do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've committed this great crime, and
yeah.
it's now been...
I suppose it gives them a sense of revenge on... perpetrator too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's not gonna help, but I mean,
they feel like justice.
At the moment, they would. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Remove the risk.
Yeah, I know. There's a. I know of a woman whose husband and two daughters were violently murdered, and the suspect who. They think did it. Who, you know, there was basically a person, or a construction worker was kind of had access to their house, was building a sunroom, and he disappeared with their car. They didn't know Florida, but he just said he walked in, saw the bodies, panicked, and left with the car. And basically, the guy got off. And so this poor widow who lost her children, no punishment.
Mm-hmm.
was given, right? No punishment was meted out, no jail sentence, nothing. Yeah, and that would be deeply painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? If nobody got punished for this tremendous crime against your family, not even a jail sentence, you know what I'm saying? So there is a sense where a desire for justice in those situations is not necessarily selfish, it's a rightness, you know, kind of restoring a rightness in things. And so, I mean, and ultimately, I mean, that's kind of where I land. The purpose of capital punishment is to demonstrate a sense of rightness, and to establish the worth of a human life. So, we're going to talk about capital punishment. Basically, it's the killing of a person by judicial process as punishment. Crimes that are eligible for capital punishment are called capital offenses. So I think in the U.S. you have treason and first-degree murder. So this is kind of interesting modern history. I'll kind of read this to you. During the 36-year reign of Henry VIII, approximately 72,000 people were executed, including a number of his wives. Elizabeth I ordered 800 executions a year. And in 1769, the number of crimes punishable by death increased to 100 to 160. So this is England. I mean, they were execution happy.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1814, three English boys ranging from 8 to 11 were executed for stealing a pair of shoes.
Wow.
19 years later, a 9-year-old boy was hanged for stealing children's paint from a shop in London. Such rampant executions began to feel sympathy for the capital punishment abolitionist movement. During the 18th century and 19th century, Voltaire, Karl Marx, David Hume, and even Benjamin Franklin protested capital punishment as it was then practiced. So you kind of look at that and it's like, come on. I mean, executing a 9-year-old kid for stealing paint?
Talk about trying to put a deterrent to crime.
No kidding. I mean, it would be a deterrent, right? I mean, but what's the problem with that? I mean, from a Christian point of view.
The punishment is not for the crime.
You're seeking justice. I mean, if there's a part of justice in the crime being punished, that's is way over what requires the justice.
That's not just.
Yeah. So you have a legal principle in the Bible called lex talionis. Mm-hmm. Okay? Eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, a lot of times we think of that as like this demand. You lose an eye, you must give it. You know what I'm saying?
It's a limit.
But it's a limit. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth. You don't extract more punishment than is given. And so that would be a clear violation of eye for eye, tooth for tooth, right?
Yeah.
Just like cutting off somebody's hand for stealing. That's a violation of eye for eye, tooth for tooth. So in the United States, 5,707 people were legally executed for capital crimes in the U.S. prior to 1972. Incidentally, do you know who the last two people in Kansas who were executed?
The guys from the murder out of Garden City.
Yeah, out of Holcomb, right? The Clutter family murders were the last people, in cold blood was written about. Those were the last people to be executed.
Are the Carr brothers on death row?
The who?
The guys that rounded up the six friends in Wichita and took them out in winter and killed them.
I think they're on death
row. They were at one time, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're not, they haven't been executed.
I think the BTK killer is. Did he even get a death sentence?
I was just looking up, like, because I heard on the radio about the Daniel Lewis Lee. So that was just a couple months ago, federal execution.
That was the last?
Yeah, just 2 months ago.
Execution, right? Yeah, I don't know the Carr brother.
And that was a 5-4 Supreme Court. They appealed it to the Supreme Court. And
just
5-4, they...
The Kansas Supreme Court has withheld all executions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were very against it.
Yeah, and there's, I mean,
everyone goes early.
The BTK killer, I'm going to go out on limb, deserves to die.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, because, like, you've got a lot of positions where, you know, the death penalty is never acceptable, or they should always get the death penalty, and you've got where, biblically, you can allow for the death penalty, but it may necessarily argue for or against, you know, there's a lot of nuances to the...
A lot of things to think about.
A lot of things to think about.
I mean, if somebody murdered my daughter...
Yeah, I'm ready.
I think I'd be ready.
Yeah.
I'll pull a lever on that one.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a different kind of... I think we have to remember what we're thinking about when we say what's just, because, you know, the kid that stole the shoes or the paints or whatever, you know, God holds us all...
Yeah.
We all get the death penalty. We're all under the death penalty, and we're going to get it, you know, in terms of punishment. And so it, in some senses, the death penalty fits every crime. And God's, you know, you eat a fruit, you're under the death penalty.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a much more, God gives us a much more gracious and merciful sense of justice to administer when we withhold the death penalty for any of our crimes.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. But we'll talk about what you mentioned earlier, Alan. So in the United States, some 5,707 people were legally executed for capital crimes in the U.S. prior to 1972. But in 1972 came a landmark decision in Furman versus Georgia. By a 5-4 margin, the Supreme Court ruled that the death laws of Georgia and Texas violated the Eighth Amendment by involving cruel and unusual punishment. The decisive issue for some of the justices was that among all eligible for the most extreme punishment, the few chosen were selected by no clear standard. Mm-hmm. Right, and so that would be, remember how we talked about the unequitable application of the death penalty is a legitimate problem. So between 1972 and 1976, 35 states rewrote their laws to conform to the Supreme Court's decision. July 2nd, 1976, by a 7-2 margin, the court declared most of the new statutes acceptable. The death penalty was legal again, and in 1977, executions resumed. Many predicted a flood of executions, but it has not happened. In fact, seldom is anyone executed in the U.S., only after a lengthy battle in the courts. The numbers on death row continue to grow. As of January 1st, 2020, 2,620 people are on death row. Right now, 22 states plus the District of Columbia abolished the death penalty, but still, 22 people were executed in the United States in 2019, and 34 were sentenced to death. So, how has capital punishment been abused in the past?
Unequitable doing. So, it wasn't the same crime. Different crimes get the same death penalty.
Yeah.
So, and you know, you talked about the black situation then. When slavery was in the South, you know, that was,
yeah,
it didn't take much at all.
No.
For a capital execution.
For sure. And I think the guy who, you know, bombed the church and killed those three girls, I think he never got the death penalty. So, yeah, I mean, there is some legitimate concerns. And even, it seems like African Americans often suffer from more mistaken identity in that case. So that's why DNA evidence and stuff like that is important to kind of nail down. But the second question is, does the fact that capital punishment was a flawed practice necessarily mean that it's inherently wrong? Why or why not?
It's not wrong. Mm-hmm. It's needed, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's more accurate now than it used to be, because in the old days they would rely on an eyewitness. Mm-hmm. I think modern criminal investigations have proven that eyewitnesses can be very unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
You get two eyewitnesses, give you a difference.
Yeah.
So with the, like you say, the onset of DNA and fingerprinting and that kind of thing is,
yeah,
made it more equitable anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That you've got the right guy.
I think there's a sense too where, as your degree of certainty goes up, there's still the consideration of what is the cost if you're wrong. So in a lot of scenarios we can be okay with being 90% accurate if there's not a high cost of making a mistake. So I'm trying to think of a good example where the cost is low, but maybe you have a drug that 90% of the time it works and 10% of the time it doesn't work, but it doesn't have any negative, right? So you go ahead and use that drug. Mm-hmm. But in this case, that 10% of the time that you're wrong, the person loses their life.
Yeah.
So you require a higher degree of certainty when the costs are much higher, I think.
Mm-hmm. So any other punishment is reversible as long as the guy's still alive. You find
right.
evidence, you can reverse that.
Yeah.
But after you pull the lever, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And chop your hand off.
Yeah, you look at life without parole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's tough.
That's
but
tough too. I mean, that's
not as bad as it used to be.
Yeah. Well, living in a cage with other prisoners for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've visited people in prison.
Yeah, it's not good.
You don't want to go there. I mean,
yeah.
The worst part about being in prison is being behind bars with other prisoners.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe a white collar prison would be okay, but you know, I'm staying out of trouble. So yeah, I think that's the thing, is we, you know, when talking about capital punishment, we should be in favor of justice, and we should never ever want any situation where somebody is unfairly prosecuted for anything, especially for the death penalty. So you look at the biblical argument against capital punishment, and it is interesting, in all of Christendom there's only one denomination, and Southern Baptist Convention is more of a convention than a denomination, by the way. They're in favor of it. But the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is the only denominational church that is in favor of capital punishment. And so Pope John Paul I, or was it the second, he basically developed a theology of in which he opposed abortion, euthanasia, and to be consistent, capital punishment. And so he was trying to be pro-life in every sense. And so that's why a lot of Catholics, Roman Catholics in particular, are very ardently against the death penalty. They see it as taking of life, and all life is sacred, even the life of a murderer. Okay? So, I mean, kind of based off of, you know, some of those principles, I mean, how could a Christian oppose capital punishment? What argument could they make?
Well, what about the scripture that says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord?
Yeah. It would be wrong for us to do the Lord's job.
Yeah, how else could a Christian oppose capital punishment?
We were all image bearers of God. We're all made to do that. Would be.
Yeah, it'd be wrong to strike down an image bearer.
Yeah.
Other thoughts?
Oh, I got the arguments here.
What's that? No, I think you're going to hit it here.
First of all, while capital punishment has been taught in the Old Testament, the Mosaic Law has been supplanted by the Law of Christ. Therefore, it would be erroneous to appeal to Genesis chapter 9 or other examples in Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy, right? So that was the Old Testament. The Old Testament God of wrath. We now have the New Testament God of love. Also the sixth commandment, King James Version says, thou shalt not kill. Mm-hmm. Do you kill somebody when you execute them?
Yes.
Okay, and you shall not do it.
Yeah.
The King James
Bible. And I think that's a key one that people don't understand. Like, again, there's a totally missing idea of judgment for wrongdoing. And mm-hmm. so when, say you compare abortion, right? Mm-hmm. The view is that we oppose abortion because it's killing, mm-hmm. and that's it,
yeah.
right? So then if you say you're in favor of capital punishment, they're like, whoa, right?
Yeah.
So there's no reference to God or why the person's dying or why they're saving the life or the image. It's just
yep.
this act they think is what we oppose.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does create confusion, right, if you don't kind of build the foundation that we're made in God's image, you know, and it's connected to the gospel that
mm-hmm.
because of our sin, we deserve God's wrath.
Yeah, and there's a way, and we're going to talk a little bit about that later on. How do you harmonize where I'm clearly signaling I'm going with this, with a stand against euthanasia and abortion?
There's a misunderstanding between kill and murder.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Probably a lot of these denominations would also be against, like, war in general.
Yeah.
Like, I know
pacifist.
Mennonites, because
mm-hmm.
killing, you know,
yeah.
they don't look at different contexts of
mm-hmm.
life being lost.
Yeah.
Even though the Old Testament, even, if you're going to say that, use that command from the Old Testament, has different laws for manslaying and
yeah.
murder. I mean, like an accidental
yeah.
death versus...
And most of those denominations kind of reject the authority of Scripture.
Yeah.
Especially the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Then you have Christ seems to be advocating a higher law. We all know the famous story of the woman caught in adultery, and Jesus refused to have her executed. You also have Jesus' famous teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, that if somebody hits you on the cheek, you do what? Turn the other cheek. And so that seems to grate against any form of vengeance or retribution. The Bible also seems to emphasize mercy, right? Cain, David, and Moses committed intentional murder. And God decided to extend mercy. And then the stringent regulation, this is the most interesting one, of the Old Testament would effectively outlaw the American means of capital punishment as it is now practiced. When author outlines procedure, five procedure items are: one, absolute certainty of guilt is required. You're looking at 2 to 3 eyewitnesses. Two, so you have to have beyond the reasonable doubt. And then two, conviction required testimony of more than one witness. Given the certain proof, most likely those witnesses were to be eyewitnesses. Moreover, since stoning to death was to be done by the witnesses, one might suspect reticence to cast the first stone unless one was an eyewitness. So,
mm-hmm.
so proof beyond reasonable doubt had to be eyewitnesses. Three, if you were to frame someone or give false testimony, what was going to happen to you?
You take it.
If you accuse somebody of murder?
You get
falsely
murdered.
Well, you get the execution you wanted for him.
So, just to clarify, right? So there's a difference, right? In biblical, it wasn't beyond a reasonable doubt. It had to be absolute certainty. Right? So, we're saying that the American justice system says that you could convict someone as guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, but not be absolutely certain.
Yeah.
which wouldn't fit the biblical. And then the next one would basically require the multiple eyewitnesses to be the one that pulled the switch, right? The lever, I'm only saying.
Well, it doesn't necessarily require, but you, says, there's kind of an assumption.
It was to be done by the witnesses. Mm-hmm. The stoning was to be done by the witnesses. So
yeah, they would be part of the stoning
biblically,
process.
They would be a part of the process.
Yeah, now whether or not there was, they had to cast the first
right,
stone.
Right, but like that's the...
But everyone's going...
Okay, you know. But you don't want to be the one that convicted them and then just stand there and like, okay, everybody, go ahead. You know, like, you guys do it.
Yeah.
Because if you're...
I'll hold the coats.
Yeah.
Bible humor, though.
So.
Now, in cases where the... in difficult cases, the verdict was deferred to judicial experts. This differs from the American system in which the jurors, who often do not understand the law, must decide anyway. And five, if the verdict was guilty, the death penalty was mandatory. Lighter sentences could not be adopted. This made discriminatory application of the death penalty impossible. All people, regardless of their social standing, were treated equally if deemed guilty. Treated equal if deemed guilty. So these regulations, undoubtedly, fewer people were convicted under the Mosaic system than under others, like the American system. Opponents of the death penalty maintain that if God really wants the death penalty enforced, it ought to be administered as God required. Until then, it should be outlawed. So of these arguments, which one do you think is the strongest one? Which one kind of causes you to say, okay, they got a point there?
Last one.
Number five, for sure. And the witnesses. If you're going to be willing to put somebody to death, it should be more than just reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. It should be...
Yeah. I was going to say, I think you'd have fewer jurors convict if they said, you know, if DNA evidence proves this man innocent, then all of you are executed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have to be that sure to risk... Put your life on the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the beyond reasonable doubt thing is to be proven to the jury, but you still have to have a unanimous jury vote for the conviction.
Yeah.
So you have to prove unreasonable doubt to every one of the 12 jurors.
Mm-hmm.
Really a higher standard than just reasonable doubt. To.
Yeah,
this wouldn't be using 12 jurors. It'd be two or three witnesses.
Yeah.
And then you have an official judge kind of deciding who that is. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a pretty strong argument, but notice it does take a neutral stance on the death penalty.
Right. It doesn't say you can't. Right? It regulates when it can be done.
Yep.
Or when it can be done.
Okay. Alan's still in favor.
Still pulling the lever.
He's still pulling the lever. So what about... any of these other arguments seem to have any merit to them?
I think the eyewitness thing would get me, like, a lot of the crimes that we, you know, that we see tried are ones that don't have clear eyewitnesses. That's the purpose of the trial, is to determine what's going on.
Yeah. Well, but you do look at, let's say, like that police shooting in L.A. a couple weeks ago. I mean, that was caught on camera. I mean, so theoretically, you could have, like, a security camera clearly identifying somebody and showing it that way, which
I mean, they didn't
would
have
probably fulfill the requirement of having...
They didn't have cameras back then.
Yeah, but I'm just saying in this day and age,
yeah,
you could have somebody caught on camera doing that, and they're, you know, they look up the camera, and then they... You know, shoot the person behind the convenience store counter or something like that. So, I mean, there's a possibility of meeting that criteria.
Well, you look at, like, with the BTK murders, like, they didn't have, like, they didn't have eyewitnesses
mm-hmm.
because he killed all of them.
Yes.
And so, but he admitted to it. I mean, he was,
mm-hmm.
so you can't fulfill that because there were no eyewitnesses.
Yeah.
Because he killed all of them.
Yeah, that's true.
So there are
I mean,
situations
so the,
like
so the
that.
Death penalty...
Yeah.
So, but still, theoretically, even with these standards in place, I think with the closed circuit cameras and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
and cell phone cameras, it's you could meet many
oh,
of
yeah.
these criteria, especially the witness one now.
It's a lot
yeah.
easier to get.
Yeah. So how about any of these other arguments seem to be kind of, I don't know how I'd answer that one. That's actually a pretty good point.
I think there's a sense in which so like let's say you have two people who both let's say you both everyone agrees that both people deserve the death penalty mm-hmm. but only one gets it administered mm-hmm. okay because of inequity. So I think that there's two different solutions to that. One would say we shouldn't have executed either one mm-hmm. because it was unjust to the one who was executed. And the other would say we should have executed them both
yeah.
because they both deserved it. And I think that's a big difference
yeah.
that I get when I talk to people is that if you see a misuse of a just punishment, some would say we shouldn't administer that because of the harm that's done. In a sense, they would say that the person rightly deserving the judgment was treated unfairly because they got what they deserved and the other person got off and didn't get what they rightly deserved. And the opposing viewpoint would say the person that died deserved it and we should also execute the other person that didn't deserve. So it's either equally administering it to both.
Yeah.
So there's different ways to kind of, but I think that is a valid, you have to address
yeah.
the inequity in it.
Yeah,
it's not justice if it's not blind justice.
Yeah, and the thing is, the equitable treatment of it doesn't really make any commentary on whether or not it's ethically permissible mm-hmm. or not.
Right.
I'd say Christ seems to be teaching a higher law. That might be something that you kind of have to think through, where the one encounter that he has with a capital offense, he seems to give that person a pass. So how do you establish it from, let's say, a New Testament perspective? Right.
I think that also goes in hand with the Bible seems to emphasize mercy.
Seems to emphasize mercy. Yeah, and so I think those are, like, I can understand in light of those two points why somebody is like, yeah, I'm not there for the death penalty.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand that. I kind of see.
Would you give any mention of the fact that one incident is in the not in the early manuscripts?
We will talk about that.
Okay.
I'm just saying from the surface reading.
From the surface, okay.
From the surface. Like,
sorry,
I can see
what did
how
you
people.
Ask?
So that account, that portion of John is
all
not.
All of, well, I guess what, can of worms about
yeah.
to be opened here.
Not in the earliest manuscripts.
Yep. Yeah, we will, we'll talk about that. That's on page 8.
just give it a little.
The thunder has been stolen.
A little spoiler.
All right.
Or just getting them there, thinking about getting ready.
Yeah. So we'll kind of start building the biblical argument in favor of capital punishment. So as we consider the arguments in favor of capital punishment, we'll address the issues raised by the anti-capital punishment position. So, first one, the New King James says, "Thou shalt not kill," but a better translation would be, "You shall not murder." The verb used in this verse occurs 49 times in the Old Testament, and in every relevant use means to murder, especially with premeditation. It's never used of animals, God, angels, or enemies in battle. Okay? So it's a unique word that talks about murder. So what's the difference between murder and killing in war or capital punishment?
Murder is like person-to-person, capital punishment, and war, governments.
Okay. That's
instituted.
That is a key difference. So it's not person-to-person. It's a government-sanctioned killing versus an individual-sanctioned killing. Okay. Any other thoughts on that?
In Jesus, when he talks about if you've looked at someone with anger, you've committed murder in your heart, and I don't think murder is, there's a lot of other sins that go along with murder. You don't do it accidentally. It's on purpose, and killing one person on purpose. And that's different. It's a heart issue of, I don't like you, you made me mad, you did something, 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 so I'm going to murder you.
opposed.
So there's an evil motive.
Yes, whereas wars and capital punishment are justice seeking or fighting for something. They're not just
for self defense.
Yeah, they're not just.
I don't know, but the if you guys have seen the Saving Private Ryan, it's I don't know when that came out, but it's this war movie, and there's a scene where they kind of they're moving across Europe, and they capture this German soldier who they know, like, they were fighting and they had just lost some of their own members, and they come upon this one who's still alive, and there's this battle about they want to kill him right there. He's, you know, he's been captured. And the leader of the group, you know, gets everyone in control, and they don't have time to take him prisoner, so they basically release him because they have a mission. And then later on in the movie, he's back in the war fighting against it. And so it kind of shows the difference between killing him if they're in battle versus, okay, now he's defenseless, we've captured him.
Yeah.
This idea that it would be wrong to kill the same person in the same war under different conditions.
Yeah, so if somebody were to come after me with a knife and I were to shoot him dead, is that murder? Right, so there is a sense where you have self-defense as well. But when you're talking about the state can, without malice, you know, execute some sort of judgment and kill. The other thing, too, is God and the authors of Scripture, they're not idiots. They're not going to say, thou shalt not kill, and then immediately contradict themselves with statements about the death penalty another chapter or two later. Do you know what I'm saying? You got to give them a little bit of credit. They had a consistent, coherent worldview. So God's commanding of Israel to kill their enemies during the conquest of Canaan could not have been a violation of this commandment, either by God or by the individual soldiers who killed in battle. They were instruments of execution of divine judgment and not violators of the sixth commandment. So we will go ahead. Well, I'll just kind of read you some of these passages, and we'll probably do a little review. Regarding how we regard the Old Testament law, we admit that the Old Testament law was replaced by the law of Christ. However, consider the timing of the following, okay? So Genesis 9:6. Whoever sheds man's blood, by his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. You guys know when that was given? Scott, when was that given?
After Cain killed Abel.
After Cain killed Abel. What cataclysmic event happened right before this?
The flood.
Yeah, the flood, right? And so they get off the boat, and God tells the survivors of the human race this principle of government. So it was before the giving of the law. Secondly, Exodus 21:12, he who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. That's during the law. Romans 13:1-4. Every person is to be in subjection to governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger, who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. So given the fact that the laws were given before the Mosaic Law, in the Mosaic Law, and after the Mosaic Law, suggests about the enduring nature of capital punishment. Can you say it's just something in the Old Testament law? Right? It predates the Old Testament law, and as we'll see, it postdates the Old Testament law. So we'll go ahead and we'll pause there because we have an important question to ask in question two. But let me pray and then I'll let you go. Well, Father, we do come before you and we are grateful that you are a God of justice and that you are fair and you're righteous. And as we kind of talk about this issue, may we do so with just a mindset of your fairness and your love of justice and your regard for human life. Pray that as we worship together, be a stirring time as of praise to you and a fellowship with each other. Pray this in Christ's name, amen.